Red Sox Nation turns to first. This is Boston's most listened to nightly baseball show, The Baseball Reporter with Tony Mann.
Brought to you by Rockland Federal Credit Union, Anderson McQuaid Architectural Molding, New England Fat Loss, and Jordan's Furniture.
On Boston's home for sports, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
So I don't know what to tell you with regard to the Red Sox. I really don't know what to tell you. Okay, they're in Houston. They're about to wrap up game two here in Houston. The Red Sox are getting their asses kicked again by the Houston Astros. The score in the top of the ninth right now is Astros 8, Red Sox 1. Although it looks like the Red Sox may have just scored another run on a single to left field. I don't know, maybe they held the runner up. Not that it really matters. Nope, run scored 8-2. Yay! There you go. They're going to lose by 6 instead of 7, it appears, in Houston. But the bottom line is the Red Sox for the second straight year, appear to be falling on their face. And I say appear only because the series isn't mathematically over yet, but they are absolutely getting their asses kicked by the Houston Astros here in games 1 and 2. And to me now, unless something dramatic changes in the last three games, and I suppose you cannot rule out anything in the world of sports, but given what we've seen thus far, unless something changes completely, we're going to be looking at another offseason here in which the Red Sox get their faces kicked in the first round of the playoffs, and we have to ask, now what? Now what? How do you fix it? Where do you go? What's the problem? Is this just, again, bad luck? What is it? So I'll tell you what, let's open up the phone lines right away, 617-779-0985. I'll tell you how I feel, and then you tell me how you feel. And I'm going to resist losing my mind because, I'm past that point as it pertains to game two. I've already gone through it, and so it's out of my system. But if you are not, you are on the way home, you check in on the game, and you see the Red Sox getting their asses kicked again, then by all means, you should be irritated. You should be irritated. They've been outscored 16-3 now in this series against the Astros. This is after being outscored by the Indians 15-7 a year ago, and I take it back, at 16-4 against the Astros. Bottom line, in their last five postseason games with this group, Bogarts, Benintendi, Betts, Bradley, David Price, Craig Kimbrell, Drew Pomeranz, Chris Sale now part of the group. With this group, in five postseason games, the Red Sox have been outscored 31-11. They have not led. They have not led in a postseason game. And I said the first inning of game one of last year's division series. I said that earlier. I was wrong. It was the third inning of game one of last year's division series. They took a 2-1 lead. They gave up two runs in the bottom of that inning to fall behind 3-2. Rick Porcello did. That was it. They have not led a postseason game since that time. So how many innings in a row is that? That's 9 and 9 is 18, plus 7 basically is 25, plus another 18. 43 straight innings without leading a postseason game. 43 innings in a row. And for the majority of those, not only have they trailed, they've trailed by a lot. They've been getting their asses kicked. So here's my question to you, because I know what many of you are going to say, the manager's got to go. And you're right. I can't imagine that if this thing continues, John Farrell's keeping his job. Not when the Red Sox haven't extended him yet. They had picked up his option, but now they're in a position where they could fire him. I can't imagine John Farrell's going to be back if this team gets its ass kicked again for the second year in a row. So my question to you is that enough? Does that really do it justice? And I caution you, because the last time the Red Sox really melted down, I mean really melted down, and certainly last year, but I go back to 2011, and Red Sox ownership and upper management looked at that team and said, oh, no, we don't have a problem in the clubhouse. The problem is the manager. Terry Francona lost control of the team, and that was it. It was a managerial thing. They hired Bobby Valentine, and a year later, they had to clean out the clubhouse too. In fact, less than a year later, they had to change the makeup and DNA of the team because they recognized that they had a chemistry problem, and more importantly, a character and makeup problem, a competitive problem in that clubhouse. That's what they had. They had a major issue in there. So they had to flush the whole thing out. And then, as we all know, they rebuilt it with character guys and they won in 2013. The problem was that that was a one-night stand that was short-lived. It was lightning in a bottle. This group, this was supposed to be something more lasting and more long-term. Except that now you look at this group and you wonder, do these guys really have what it takes? Are they as good as you think they are? Is Xander Bogaerts as good as you think he is? Is Mookie Betts? Is Bradley? Is Benintendi? Are they all as good as you think they are?
Doesn't feel that way right now. The 93 wins feel like a mirage. In games that they really get blown out in, even the regular season, it feels like they can't beat anybody. So it's not just the manager. Do I want the manager gone, Maz? Yes. But the core of this team, it stinks too. And okay, outside of Rafael Devers, who I think is a real talent, anybody should be on the table to make a big deal, whether that's for a big bat, which they desperately need, or maybe it's just time to say goodbye to Dustin Pedroia and try to convince him that, you know, we need to move on from you.
Okay, so Murray, I want to clarify something here because we had Chris Gasper on the afternoon show, and Gasper said at one point, oh, wow, you are, you know, you're preaching a fire sale. No. I'm not preaching a fire sale. You have a good team. You don't have a great team. You have a good team. And I look at these players, Betts, Bradley, Bogaerts, Benintendi, and obviously Benintendi has the most promise of that group, I think. Betts certainly has a lot of promise, too. But I look at that group and say, you have a lot of good players there. Pretty good to good. I don't know if you have a great one. And to get a great one, you're going to have to give up something from that group. Now, Devers, I'm reluctant to give up Devers, and I don't know ultimately how good he's going to be. But the reason I'm reluctant to give up Devers is because they think his power is real. And they need power. They need game-changing power, as is becoming evident in this series while Houston hits one ball after the next out of the ballpark, and the Red Sox are struggling to score. 8-2 is your final, by the way. Again, as was the case in Game 1, you lose in this series 16-4, you're down 2-0, and Doug Fister's going Game 3. Okay? So, again, you tell me. You tell me as a fan. I've ranted and raved all along about how this Red Sox team, to me, when you put them in a real spot, how do they respond? Because to me, the postseason last year, and I've said this a million times, the postseason last year left a mark. To see them fail the way they did was disturbing to me. And so it's nice. They had a bunch of extra inning wins during the regular season. We could talk about come-from-behind wins, last-at-bat wins. All of that stuff is well and good. Now they've gotten into October again against a team that is better than them. Okay, the Astros are better than the Red Sox are. Are they 8-2 better? Are they 16-4 better? Are they ass-kicking better? Because I don't think they are. I think in addition to the Astros playing well and rising to the occasion, I think the Red Sox are also turtling. That's what I think is happening. But again, you tell me. And let me just tell you, from my two cents, if you want to get rid of the manager, fine. Who in this town is going to stop you from that? I think John Henry's reached that point at this stage, I would hope. I don't know if Dave Dombrowski has. We'll find out. But you want to get rid of the manager, fine, no problem. Is that really enough? Is it enough? Is the manager alone enough? Because I don't think it is. Let's go to your calls. Ryan's in Andover. Go.
Hey, man. Well, to your point, I think a power bat is the main thing. But I look at this young talent that we have, and Houston is a perfect team to match up against to really see the glaring difference between our guys and their young guys. Because, to be honest with you, I don't think there's a huge difference in talent. I think there's a huge difference in mentality. You see Bregman step up there against Sale, smack a home run, and the first thing he does is look at his dugout and say, let's go. We're starting this off right. I don't see a guy on our team, all the young talent talking about Betts, Benintendi. I don't see one of those guys with that sort of, like, for lack of a better term, swagger that gets up there. And that is contagious, especially in the playoffs. You need gamers, not just talent, and I think we're missing that.
So, Ryan, you used the word swagger. On the comment line here, the word that the call screener typed in, I think it's Quinn, our intern, was edge. The Red Sox lack edge. And you know what? It's a great word for it. Chris Sale, when he pitches, has edge on the mound. Okay, now, Sale had an absolutely dreadful Game 1, but he pitches with edge. Let me ask you, does Mookie Betts play with an edge?
No.
Or does he play with enthusiasm?
Enthusiasm, but right, not so, much of an edge.
But you understand like the difference.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right? Like, there's an energy to Betts' game, but it's all positive, right?
Yeah.
And I say, it sounds like, well, what's wrong with positive energy? Nothing. Except that at some point, when you're a professional athlete...
Sometimes you got to grab a jersey and MF somebody.
Bingo. When you're a professional athlete, there's got to be that level of anger. There's got to be someone in there who will get mad, who plays with anger. Does Bogaerts play with anger?
No.
How about Bradley?
No.
Benintendi, I wonder. I think he might have, but again, he's part of the dance crew in center field, too. Like, they're all having a gay old time out there. It's fabulous.
Yeah, but...
who plays with... Who really competes with an edge?
None of them. I mean, Benintendi might have it. Anything you ever read about him coming up through Double A, he had a little bit of an arrogance and a prickish attitude to him, which I think you need to have to really succeed at any level of professional sports. But Betts, no. I know exactly what you mean, because there's times, there's flashes, but it's enthusiasm. There's not that... You know, I don't need to see the David Ortiz grabbing a bat and smashing the phone in the dugout type of thing, but sometimes someone has to go back in that dugout, or maybe even in the clubhouse, and grab a jersey and say, like, let's go, you sons of bees. Like, come on. Like, we're getting murdered here, and we shouldn't, because we're a good team.
So, Murray, I sound like an old bastard when I start telling these sorts of stories, and without getting into who said it to me years ago, you know, covering the Red Sox, someone said to me, you know, when you watch players, some of them, most of them, many of them, love to play. They love to play. How many of them love to compete? Okay, like, there's a difference. And Jeter loved to compete. And a lot of the guys on that 04, 03, 04 team, they love to compete. Right? Like, you go right, Millar, say what you will, love to compete. Schilling, love to compete.
Yeah, it's not about cash and the paycheck. They want to win.
Right. Johnny Damon, loved to compete. Pedro, loved to compete.
That 13 team, Victorino, Napoli, Gomes.
Competitors, Jimmy. They were competitors. They loved to compete. These guys look like they love to play. Just me. Mookie Betts looks like he loves to play. Does he really love to compete? Does Bogaerts? Does Bradley? Because I don't see the guys getting pissed off when they lose.
We have the Sox covered. The Baseball Reporters, 98.5, the Sports Hub. Radio.com. Radio. We have the Sox covered. This is the Baseball Reporter's Tony Maserata show that Red Sox Nation turns to first. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Fastball is hammered, and the Astros lead 2-0. Just a rocket here by Correa.
Pomeranz delivers 1-0. Now Altuve cracks a soft liner that'll sink in front of Benintendi for a base hit. Bregman in to score on an Altuve single, and the Astros lead 4-1. That is down the line, a fair ball, and it goes all the way to the corner. Springer's in to score. Here comes Altuve, a two-run double for Carlos Correa.
Many of you know this. Some of you don't, and think that I hate the team, or I don't hate the team. It's quite the opposite. I grew up here. The Red Sox are in my blood. I want to see them do well. For whatever reason, I care. Okay, I care. I care about baseball. I care about the team. I want to see him do well. In fact, I feel that way about all the teams in town, despite what you may believe. And so when they do something stupid or they fail to live up to expectations, I get frustrated. I get frustrated. And my job, in part, is to express that to you. And when they do things well, it is to express that too. Okay? So maybe I don't do the second thing enough. But this thing now, this is 2 years in a row. Okay, before we get to the phones, and please just sit for 1 second. Here's what your starters have done in the postseason the last 2 years. Rick Porcello, 4 1/3, 6 hits, 5 runs earned, 3 homers. David Price, 3 1/3, 6 hits, 5 runs, all earned, 2 walks, and 1 homer. Clay Buchholz, who was the best of the lot, incredibly. 4 innings, 6 hits, 2 runs, both earned, no home runs. Chris Sale, 5 innings, he went 5. 9 hits, 7 runs, all earned, 3 home runs. And Drew Pomeranz today, 2 innings, 5 hits, 4 runs, all earned, 2 homers and a walk. Combined, 18 2/3. 18 2/3 in 5 games from your starters. 32 hits, 23 runs, 9 home runs, and an ERA of 11.09. 11.09. Very few teams are going to overcome that. Okay, very few teams are going to overcome that. At the same time, what are the Red Sox hitting? In the low 200s? Something's missing. Okay, something's missing, and to me it's an intangible, along with somebody who can, in the middle of the lineup, who can really threaten to hit the ball out of the ballpark consistently for 150 games. Raphael's in New Hampshire. Go ahead.
You know, to me, it seems that no one on this team has a backbone. It seems that no one cares for losing. I want to see the passion that should go into winning. And this team is just, I'm sick and tired of it. I think it just needs to be blown up, either start from scratch. I know that's it's hard to do, but with the amount of money that these players are getting paid, they should show some passion for this game. They need
Raphael, I'll tell you what. Listen, leave the money out of it, okay? And listen, none of them like losing. I'm not even saying that. Of course they dislike losing. I'm just telling you that competitively, in these postseason games, the intensity goes up. Okay, now baseball's a game where a long-term approach and level-headedness works during the regular season. It does. During the regular season, you need that. But when you get into a big series, and when you get into a big playoff series, or you get into the postseason at all, now all of a sudden the even-keeled nature doesn't always work. You need to elevate. There are times where you need to rise to the occasion and meet the intensity and the anger and the energy of the other side. And it feels to me like this team over and over does not do it. Jason's in Lowell.
All right. I agree with you guys about everything. But I blame the non-production of the players more than I do the coaches, because the coaches do the lineup and all that other stuff. The players are the ones performing. They're not performing.
Okay, so Jason, how do you fix that?
Well, basically, you would have to do a bunch of, like you said, blow it up, or you need that bat. You need that person that can hit home runs and give you the runs and just going to take charge of the team. I thought it would be Hanley Ramirez, but it's not. And the thing is like...
Jason, I'm going to let you go just because I want to get to other calls. Okay, so it's not just the bat. It's not just the bat. There's more than that. They got to make more than one tweak to that. The manager, most people are going to agree on. Okay, so forget it. Get rid of the manager. Fine. No problem. See you later. Is that alone going to change it? Is that going to change the makeup of some of these players? Maybe it will. Maybe I'm wrong about that. But I look at it and say, you need thunder in the middle of the lineup. You need a guy who will step in the box and make the opposition go, uh-oh. We got to be careful here. I'd rather walk this guy or give up a double than give up a home run. So, fine. A guy who completely changes the game by stepping into the box. They don't have it. They don't have it. So, I'd like to see that move. Additionally, and Chris Gasper of the Globe was on this afternoon saying, Giancarlo Stanton might not have the personality to play in Boston. And Gasper's right. Stanton is not a guy who's a quote-unquote leader. He's a power hitter, but he's not a leader. So, in addition to a guy like Stanton, you got to go find yourself a veteran guy that is going to hold everybody else in the clubhouse accountable and say, are you ready to play today? So now, who that is, I have no idea off the top of my head. But to me, there's also an issue there. Okay, there's also an issue there. There's got to be someone who competitively holds the other guys accountable. This team has an accountability problem. I hate to tell you that. My buddy Angelo's in Methuen. Go ahead, Angelo.
Hi, Tony. First of all, you're right. The dugout for the Red Sox, it's like a wake. You look at Houston, even when they're on defense, they're standing up, clapping, cheering their team on. And on offense, it's a different story. Farrell waited too long to take out Palmer. Because after he gave up a home run, a double, and a single, and then he took him out.
So Angelo, look, with regard to Farrell today, and I don't know how many people saw the game. Again, it happened during the workday. It was an afternoon game. Pomeranz came out in the second inning. Carson Smith was the first reliever in the game. He got in trouble in the third. Oh, it was the third inning that Pomeranz came out. He didn't get anybody out, right? So Smith came in, and the jam got worse. So now all of a sudden it's 4-1. The lead went from 2-1 to 4-1, Jimmy, in that inning. And then, because again, we're on the air during all this. So Smith now gets to a point where basically the bases are loaded with one out in a 4-1 game in the third inning. Why did Smith come in the game at all? Because the next guy in was David Price. So I look at that and say to Farrell, you're in game two. You're already down in the series 1-0. They're about to blow this game open against Pomeranz, and the guy you bring in is Carson Smith. Again, this is identifying the pressure point in a game where things could explode. Just as Joe Girardi did in the one-game playoff against the Twins the other night. It was six batters into the game when he took his starter out. He had his reliever warming up after three, I think it was, maybe four. So Girardi recognized already, first inning, pressure point. If I'm not careful here, it's 5-6 nothing, and we're done. The Astros today are about to blow a 4-1 game open to a 6-1 game, 7-1 game, and Carson Smith is the guy who comes in? When David Price has been lights out? So Smith comes out of the game, Price comes in. You know what happened? Pop up, Price get out of it, and Price gave him two more innings after that. The game stayed 4-1. Price did his job. But again, it took Farrell an intermediary step to get there. And then after that, now the game's still 4-1. You know who the next pitcher in the game is? You're going into the seventh inning. And you know what I said? Well, if you got to go here, Addison Reed and Kimbrel combined for three innings, you do that. You got a day off tomorrow. You got to keep this game at 4-1 and give yourself a chance. So if you have to get nine outs combined out of Addison Reed and Kimbrel, that's what you do. You know who came into the game? Eduardo Rodriguez. Eduardo Rodriguez, whom the Red Sox deemed to be so, you know, who deemed him to be out of the rotation entering the postseason. He's not good enough to start a postseason game, but he's good enough to bring in with your season on the line down 4-1 in the top of the or the bottom of the sixth. That's when you bring him in. The guy who you bump out of the rotation for the postseason. That's when you bring in Eduardo Rodriguez. When you could go to Reed and Kimbrel combined for nine outs. You know what Rodriguez did? Gave up a hit. I think it was a double down the line and then hit the next batter. Three pitches he threw before he was out of the game. And you know who came in then? Addison Reed. So if Reed was going to come in once the fire started, why wasn't Reed in before then? So you want to go a Farrell for decisions? Fine. Fire the manager? No problem. It doesn't solve the whole issue. It doesn't solve the whole issue. They got a makeup problem, too, on this team. It's been there all year. It's been there since last October. And a lot of people didn't want to necessarily delve into it. Okay, you didn't want to go that far because you wanted to believe, which I get, because I want to believe, too. But they just don't rise to the occasion. They don't. And not only do they lose, they're getting their asses kicked and they're embarrassing themselves.
The Baseball Reporter's Tony Mazz, 98.5, The Sports Hub. Radio.com. Radio.com. This is The Baseball Reporter's.
Which makes all the sense in the world if you're the Red Sox.
With Tony Mazzarotti, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
What did you think of Price today, and with the way he's pitched, would you entertain the idea of a short start for him if later in the series it's available?
Well, it wouldn't be on Sunday. I think what we're seeing is 40 pitches is about the comfort zone which he's been built out at.
And I found John Farrell's answer, and that's today. That was after the game today. Farrell's answer there, interesting. Okay, interesting. So, you know, we'll play for again in the event you weren't paying all that much attention, because, again, you know, sometimes your mind is elsewhere. Happens to us here all the time when hosts aren't listening, Murray. So Jimmy Stewart again, play the cut.
What did you think of Price today, and with the way he's pitched, would you entertain the idea of a short start for him if later in the series it's available?
Well, it wouldn't be on Sunday. I think what we're seeing is 40 pitches is about the comfort zone which he's been built out at.
Well, it wouldn't be on Sunday. What if he get past Sunday?
Sounds like he would have availability for game four.
Huh, interesting. All of a sudden they're opening the door on that. Just in time for winter. No, it's good. Fabulous. So, look, Price was good today. Big spot. Tough spot.
Maybe the lone bright spot.
Bases loaded. 4-1 game. You can't let any runs come in. You're in the third inning. You're about to get blown out. Price comes in. Pop up. Get out of the inning. And he threw the ball well. Okay, he threw the ball well. The pop-up pitch, the pitch he threw on, it was 3-2 pitch. It was an excellent pitch on 3-2. Excellent. And then Price gave you two more scoreless. He kept the game there. He did his job. Isn't that funny? A year later, David Price is the only one doing his job in the postseason. My God, whoever would have thought that? John's in the car. Go, John.
Hi. I wanted to find out why there's no African-American host on the show. You got, like, Tutcher and Ridge, Yeah, Joe Beto, Ewan Felger, and Adam Jones. Why not?
So, John, I'm going to let you go. Just not the topic for today. Okay, Diggy's in Leominster. Go ahead, Diggy.
Hey, yeah, that was a nice call. There's a lot to be frustrated about here. There's like a number of problems, but a few of them, if the offense is anemic, they need Stanton or another power left-handed bat, and Farrell's got to go. He's been a number of times on the hot seat. He's had like a horseshoe up his poop shoot. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, so look, a lot of people are going to say the manager's got to go, and that's fine. I'm not going to put up any resistance on that. When there are a lot of people who think if this series keeps going the way it's going, Farrell's gone. A lot of people believe that, and I can't tell you you're wrong. This team gets to a certain point, and then they fail. And if you want to tell me there's a certain passivity to it and that the Red Sox have taken on the personality of their manager, you wouldn't be the first person to make that argument. You might be right. Farrell got in Pomeranz's face back in May, and all of a sudden Pomeranz pitched better and had a hell of a year. I don't think those two things are necessarily unrelated. I think sometimes people need to be challenged, and Farrell, as a pitching coach, used to challenge guys. Maybe he doesn't challenge these guys enough. I don't know. Maybe. But I also think that it goes beyond just the manager. I think there is a shortage of power in the lineup. I think I agree. I don't think it's one thing. And I also think that there is a competitive problem with this Red Sox team. They can't get to the next level for whatever reason competitively. I have one more request before we get back to the phones. Please try to keep your calls short because I know a lot of people want to get in. A lot of you are pissed off and you have a right to be. Brian's in a car. Go, Brian.
Hey, Tony. Hypothetically, say the Sox win game 3. Who are you pitching game 4 and why?
So, Brian, right now, believe it or not, I'm leaning Rick Porcello, but ask me again, depending on how the next couple of days go and how Sunday goes, and you might be able to talk me into David Price. I'm not making that determination until after Sunday. Because everybody's available Sunday, right? We got to agree on that. What are you going to do now? Not dump out your bullpen when you're facing the final game of the season? So if Farrell was today willing to bring Carson Smith into a game in the third inning, down 4-1, with his season effectively on the line, is he going to do it again on Sunday? I mean, like, at this stage, how many people are you really willing to give the ball to? Like, now it's nut-cutting time. So who are you going to give the ball to on Sunday with your season on the line? Doug Fister's going to start. But then after that, how many people do you really trust? Price? Maybe Reed? He wasn't great today either. And then Kimbrel, and then who else? Where do you go after that? Start asking yourself that question, too. Jonathan's in a car. Jonathan, go.
Hey, guys. Just want to talk about Dustin Pedroia's garbage performance in the last few games. And hear your thoughts on that. Thank you.
Okay, so Jonathan, Pedroia also has stunk in this series. He stunk last postseason. He's not the same player, clearly. He's got a chronic knee problem, it feels like. I just don't know how you solve that because you can't trade him. He's a 10-5 guy. I don't think you can DH him because he doesn't hit enough and you got Hanley here. So you're stuck with him. Now, look, all things being said or equal, Pedroia has been part of championship teams in the past. So I don't think Dustin Pedroia is the problem that a lot of other people think he is. I don't think Dustin Pedroia is a leader, and this team needs a leader. But if you found a leader, could Dustin Pedroia still be part of the mix here? Of course, and I'll tell you what, you're going to have to keep him, because who's going to take him off your hands? Frank's in a car. Go, Frank.
Yeah, Tony, the talk about this being a heart problem, a competitiveness problem, an edge problem, this is enough of the group think. This is a talent problem. I mean, we think about this team like they're somehow the 27 Yankees. They were the third-best team in the American League last year. They're the third-best team in the American League this year.
They might be fourth. They might be fourth. They might be the fourth-best team, Frank. And I'm sorry to cut you off, but do you think it's purely talent?
I think the vast majority of it's talent. Really, look around the infield. This is not a team that's a championship-caliber team. And your second starter is Drew Pomeranz. That's just not good enough. We're not even close. I mean, Houston runs circles around us.
Okay, so Pomeranz is the second starter right now. But tell me, when you say who lacks talent, I want names. Give me, and not pitching, positional players. Who doesn't have the talent that a lot of people think they do?
You look across our infield. You've got Mitch Moreland. You've got a part of Dustin Pedroia. You've got Xander Bogaerts, who is not the player we thought he was, clearly. And then you've got a rookie at third base, and it were Nunez at one time. That is not championship caliber. I'm sorry.
Okay, so Frank, listen, you mentioned Moreland. Moreland's a he's a nomad. Moreland's gone. Moreland's not staying. Moreland's an easy one. See you later. Bye. But and you know what? Devers is a rookie, like you said. Fine. So and Pedroia's an easy one too. Focus on the hard ones. Focus on the outfield. Focus on Bogarts in the outfield. Those are your core guys now. Focus on Benintendi, Bradley, Betts, and Bogarts. Tell me, which of those guys really lived up to his promise this year? Maybe Benintendi. And he's the youngest, so he also gets latitude because of that. And he finished strong. But you know what? There was about a three-month stretch there where Benintendi hit under 230. And again, he's dancing around in the outfield there after wins, too. He looks like a guy that, you know, likes to play. Does he like to compete? Do they have a guy and a leader who really likes to compete? So now say what you want about someone like David Ortiz, and he's an easy one to pick. But Ortiz in the batter's box, do you remember the look on his face when he would step out and kind of look at the mound and he would kind of start, you know, patting his bat or strapping his batting gloves? He would have that look on his face like, how's this guy trying to get me out? How am I going to fight this guy? It doesn't feel to me like they have that quality anymore. I just don't feel like they have that quality. So that's part of it, too. The talent, absolutely. The manager, no question. They also have a makeup problem. They do. It's been there. They can compete during the regular season. What happens when they really go up against someone that stares them down and they have the same talent the Red Sox do? What happens then?
The Baseball Reporters, 98.5, the Sports Hub. Radio.com. Radio.com.